Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 23rd day of April, 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. We'll check in on the weather forecast with Mike Tenora, T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois, see how much rainfall we might get over the next several days. And what will happen next week as producers really begin to think about ramping up planting across the whole of the Midwest. Along the way today, too, speaking of planting, we'll talk with farmer and Channel Seeds consultant from Bennett Consulting, Matt Bennett out of Windsor, Illinois, about the cash grain market as we make our way through this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Remember, you can always find us online anytime you'd like to listen to our programs at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check now the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for this Thursday afternoon. Futures in the corn pit were lower, down a penny and three quarters in the May contract at $3.70 and three quarters of a cent. July, $3.76 and three quarters, two and three quarters lower. In September, $3.84 and a quarter, down three and a quarter. December corn, 3 cents lower, $3.94 and a half. And the March settlement price at $4.05 and a quarter in the corn pit, down 2.5 cents. Soy complex was higher, $9.78 and a quarter, up seven and three quarters. July, $9.80, 8 and a quarter higher. August at $9.76 and a quarter, up 8 cents. And September beans at $9.65 and a half, up 8 and a quarter. November futures $9.61 and a half, 7 and three quarters higher for the day. And January soybeans 7 and three quarters higher as well at $9.68. Bean meal up $1.10 in the nearby May, and bean oil at 46 cents higher as it finished the afternoon. Soft red winter wheat in the July contract up 2 and a quarter cents at $5.01 and a quarter. And the hard red July at $5.22, up 4 and three quarters for the day. Live cattle futures from the CME Group finished the April at $159.30, the $3 limit higher. June at $149.25, also up the $3 limit. Feeder cattle for the day at $2.14 and a nickel, $1.50 higher. May futures at $211.25, up $4.50. And the lean hogs on the afternoon in the May contract at $71.80, up $1.10. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It does come to you from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
Checking the outside markets at this hour. Futures in the crude oil pit at $57.69 a barrel, up $1.53 for the afternoon. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.92 and a half, 5 4/10 cents higher. Gasoline on the RBOB or wholesale price at $1.99 and 8 cents, up 7 3/10 cents per gallon. And the natural gas for the day finished in its last trade for the nearby contract at $2.53 and 9 cents. 6 9/10 cents lower on the afternoon. Ethanol futures, settlement price at $1.62 and 3 cents, down 1/10 cent. That in the May, the June contract at $1.60 and 7 cents, up 9/10 cents for the day. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 18,030. It's about 85 points higher. Gold futures around $1,196 or $9.25 higher, and the June dollar index at 97.455 is down 0.683 for the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area yet this afternoon. 58 degrees, sunny skies tonight. Patchy frost after 4 a.m., otherwise mostly clear, a low of 30. Tomorrow, patchy frost before 7 a.m., otherwise increasing clouds, a high of 62. And then tomorrow night, occasional showers, those will come after 1 a.m., a low of 44. Chance of precipitation on Friday night, 80%. That will continue at the 80% level through the day on Saturday with a high of 54, and it says occasional showers. So it should be a wet start to the weekend. More on the weather forecast at the bottom of the half hour.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
This is the April 23rd edition of the Closing Market Report, a Thursday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Dan Zwicker is with us from CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. Dan, thank you so much for taking the time this afternoon. Was there anything of real interest fundamentally in the news for the day?
Not really. I think there's several things that kind of came together. Number one, it was an oversold market, so it was ripe for some kind of technical bounce. We have seen the dollar break hard here today. It's down against its 50-day moving average after kind of going sideways for several weeks. It kind of looks like maybe the dollar might be rolling down in here, and if that would roll down, that would kind of maybe give the overall commodity complex kind of a boost. We did see gold up $10 a day, and then crude oil was up about 50. So some of the outside markets are starting to perk up a little bit. Actually, the crude oil market is getting ready for a golden cross coming out of a sideways market, and that'll be interesting to see what happens there. That might help us out over on the corn market with ethanol margins if gasoline futures and everything would start moving higher in here. But most of the worry is still cold weather, corn planting delays, but it's just, you know, a shade early for the market to really respond to any kind of planting delays. We're still in April. I think 2 weeks from now, if you're visiting with me and we still have a real slow pace of planting going on, I think the market then would probably have to recognize the fact that maybe things ain't going quite as well as what they had priced into their balance sheets. I think a lot of it, too, is waiting to see what USDA does on their May supply-demand table. That kind of sets the marker, and after the last couple of years, with USDA coming out with some real lofty yield projections early, that kind of sent the market lower last year, and it'll be interesting to see what they come out with this year. Maybe we're going to make a low this year rather than a high, and we'll go up from here. But we'll have to just kind of see what happens with this planting. It is definitely going to be delayed, and we'll have to see where we're at, I guess.
You know, while we do have numbers from the United States Department of Agriculture for the coming crop, or the crop that's being planted at this time for corn and soybeans, the official numbers for the USDA for the new crop as it relates to the supply and demand tables, as you alluded to, doesn't come out for the first time until we get to the month of May. Those numbers are due. Do you think they will come out with an average, the same sort of bushels per acre that they've been working with for corn and soybeans, or will they adjust those very much based on what little we know about this growing season so far?
Well, I think it depends probably on how much we get planted between now and then. That's more of a world board guess, and so they don't have no time limit on that. I think they just kind of sit down a day or two or so before maybe they release those supply and demand tables. It's just basically, I think that's an ongoing process of looking at what they think, what new crop demand is going to be. I think they'll probably take a look at planting pace, where the problem areas are. They may tweak the yield based upon the planting pace. I think that they they got a model, I think, based upon planting dates and what that should maybe yield, whatnot. So that'll probably depend upon what happens in the next couple of weeks. The thing that's, I think, different this year than last year that may have an impact is last year at this time, the market was rallying, so there was an economic incentive, and we were at much higher price levels. There was an economic incentive to plant every acre you could get planted and probably put all the fertilizer on that you could. This year, prices are breaking. especially corn. So the incentive to go out and add additional corn acres to your mix is really not there. If anything, the weather pattern is suggesting that you push acres into maybe soybeans or something else. And we'll have to kind of see how that impacts what the final numbers are in June. But boy, there's, you know, a lot of water going under the bridge between now and into June.
You know, we've talked about more soybean acres, with the exception of USDA, I think, for 6 months or better. However, in the charts and on the board, I suppose, if you want to look at it that way, the price of soybeans has remained fairly strong for both old and new crop. While it's low, it's not nearly as low as many people had expected it might be by this time.
No, beans just aren't breaking for the guys. I mean, if I've heard the record South American crop once, I've heard it a million times since January 1st, and it doesn't seem to be busting the market. I mean, yes, you look at a July soybean chart, and the trend has been down, if you want to draw some trend lines, but it hasn't busted as much as what I think a lot of traders were looking for. I think if you were to talk to them back in January, they would have said we probably would have, you know, an 8 in front of soybeans by now, and where July beans closed at 980. One thing I did do a video, people can kind of catch that on the CGB wire or Twitter wire or whatever, on July 15 soybeans, and I see a broadening bottom formation, which is suggesting that the first target here is take a run to 999 on July soybeans, and depending upon what the fundamentals are at that point in time, we could then maybe move up another 50 cents or so. So it does have an interesting chart formation that is opposite of what the general thinking would be as far as increased soybean acres. So I don't know what the fundamentals are going to be to drive that. If indeed we do take another run toward the $10 on July soybeans.
Hey, before I let you go, I want you to answer one quick question for me. Early on, you talked about a golden cross in the crude oil. What does that look like in the chart?
Well, basically what that is a 50-day moving average climbing above the 100-day moving average. Now, that's what I call sort of golden cross in commodities. When you get into stock indexes and that, some of the guys look at longer-term moving averages. They'll maybe look at the 50 moving above the 200-day or something like that. But what makes those work real well is a sideways market. And you can take a look at crude oil and kind of see, like the June chart, which I got in front of me, basically since January, basically since mid-December, until now, crude oil has been trading between $47 and $57. It's been in a $10 range. And we're on the verge of breaking out of that sideways range to the upside after several weeks going sideways. And then if this 50-day crosses above the 100, which that's going to happen, then you'll get new technical buying coming into the market. And that's should send crude oil prices to a little higher level than what everybody thought. Let's see whether or not that happens or not, but at least technically it tells me that something is in the works, that we're going to have some higher crude oil prices. And like I said, that should be helpful over on the energy side of the corn balance sheet.
All right. Hey, thanks so much, and we'll talk with you again next week.
Very good.
Dan Zwicker is with CGB Enterprises. He's out of Mandeville, Louisiana. Joins us on this Thursday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report and comes to you each and every day on willag.org. Anytime you'd like to go and find him, that is. That's at willag.org. We'll have him posted there not long after our program ends if you'd like to hear it again. Let's check in now on today's agricultural news. The product of months of negotiations between Democrats and Republicans, Trade Promotion Authority, and other trade bills advanced through the Senate Finance Committee after an objection by one Democrat kept the panel from meeting for hours. Chairman Orrin Hatch called it an historic bill.
It includes almost 150 ambitious, high-standard negotiating objectives that will direct our trade negotiators to break down barriers that American exporters face in the 21st century economy. The bill also contains unprecedented consultation requirements that will enhance Congress's role throughout the trade negotiating process.
Hatch says in a clear appeal to reluctant Democrats that lawmakers and the public will be able to review trade deals before they're signed. Top finance Democrat Ron Wyden appealed to organized labor and other backers of his party.
This package is going back to American workers with job training, financial support, and access to health care when they are knocked off stride by the global economy. It is a tough challenge competing in global markets, and there is fierce competition everywhere.
Ag Senator Chuck Grassley argues American agriculture also needs a level playing field in trade.
The bill includes clear negotiating objectives for the standards on sanitary and phytosanitary regulations that must be science-based, which will help limit disruptions to U.S. agricultural exports.
Grassley also backed a bipartisan amendment to toughen TPA language targeted largely at China to stop countries from intentionally undervaluing currencies to make their export goods cheaper. The package of trade bills, facing time pressure from trans-Pacific trade talks, could hit the Senate floor soon. Speaking of the Senate Agriculture Committee this week held a hearing on the potential to increase U.S. ag and food sales to Cuba, that by lifting the trade embargo. Senate Ag Ranking Member Debbie Stabenow says ag sales to Cuba are a way to rebuild trust between U.S. and that nation. Vermont Senator Patrick Lay says there will not be an immediate commercial windfall for American agriculture, as Cuba has used the embargo for its own purposes, and repealing it would allow the development of a more efficient economic relationship. And finally, in the quick news notes, let's switch from the Senate to the House. Representatives Rod Blum of Iowa, David Young of Iowa, Ken Buck of Colorado, and Colin Peterson of Minnesota introduced the Fuel Choice and Deregulation Act of 2015 yesterday. The legislation mirrors a Senate bill to increase the availability of E15 in the marketplace. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. More people than you might think are keeping chickens in their backyards. These birds, just as those grown commercially, are at risk to the H5N2 avian influenza virus. There are some reasons for that, and there are some things that backyard keepers of flocks can do to protect their birds. Turkeys and chickens all along the Mississippi River Flyway in the Midwest are at risk to catching the flu every year. This year, a new highly contagious version of the virus called H5N2 has developed. It's nasty and the bird killer. This is why the U.S. government is taking so much care to control its spread. The farm manager of the University of Illinois Poultry Research Facilities, Chet Utterback, says commercial flocks aren't the only birds at risk.
I would encourage anyone and everyone that has, whether you have 2 chickens, 20 chickens, or 200 chickens, or 200,000, or 2 million chickens, to be very, very diligent in staying away from areas where there are Canadian geese nesting, where there are any waterfowl whatsoever.
Migratory birds of all types stop along their routes at water sources. It doesn't matter much how busy the area is. If there's a pond, there are likely to be at least a few Canadian geese around. They could be carrying the flu, and it could be H5N2, and you could walk right through it. Though that, to this point, wouldn't be a problem for your own health. It could be a load of problem for your birds.
The biggest thing people need to realize is how many viruses are there. According to a microbiologist at Penn State who was involved with the outbreak in 2006, in a 1 gram positive sample of manure from a wild waterfowl, which is about the size of a dime, they counted over 1 million flu viruses that have the potential to infect other birds.
The point is, biosecurity measures need to be taken to protect backyard flocks as well as commercially raised birds. It's a big word, but in this case simply means not wearing the same clothes or shoes into the coop that you might have just been wearing at the shopping center or the pond or any place wild waterfowl gather. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Thursdays, we always check in with Matt Bennett from Channel Seeds and Bennett Consulting out of Windsor, Illinois. Matt, how are you today? Last week, I think we checked in. You had not turned a wheel yet, at least in terms of planting corn. Has that changed over the past week?
No, it hasn't. We got enough rain over the weekend to kind of keep us out. We could probably plant tomorrow. We're just kind of waiting to see what the forecast looks like. We'll probably plant some tomorrow, but I don't foresee us getting terribly carried away with soil temperature and so on.
And I suspect you're still not worried about things yet, right?
No, not really. You know, I mean, like we've talked before, in 2013, we didn't turn a wheel till 15th of May, planted the entire corn crop in about 5-6 days and had a pretty good crop. So, I hate to get terribly worried about it just yet. I think the bigger issue is, in certain places when they're still awfully wet, like the Delta and, Tennessee, Kentucky, their areas like that, guys are a little bit worried about maybe switching a few acres. So I think that's probably the more overriding issue.
How does the marketplace, both corn and soybeans, feel to you at the moment?
Well, kind of surprised to see the close in corn today. To me, I'm a little bit surprised that beans are rallying as well. It was nice to see the corn export figures come out this morning as strong as what they did. And so I guess I was a little bit surprised with everything. I wasn't surprised with anything until the close in corn because I thought it was a pretty nice day up until then.
It wasn't bad until then. Do you expect follow-through this evening then or not?
It's going to be interesting to see. I think going into the weekend, at this time of year, you always have some people who are pretty jittery, trying to figure out which side of the market to get on. It's not late enough, in my opinion, to get super fired up about it. It looks to me like there's going to be areas that are pushed back far enough that the acreage implications are certainly going to be on my radar. I don't think that we're going to grow corn acreage. I think it's going to come back just a little bit. How much will be interesting to see. And I think bean acreage will grow. So at this point, looking at a new crop, boy, I have a hard time not looking at that spread of, maybe buying some new crop corn and selling some beans because I can't imagine that thing will narrow.
What do you see in the local area as far as basis goes at this time? And I know producers have not really been in the field, but I suspect they haven't been moving much in the way of grains or oil seeds, either one.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a whole lot of movement. Obviously, farmers holding on to a record amount of corn. The basis just continues to get a little bit better. But I've been telling guys to be very cautious because there's such large farmer ownership of corn. I could see us getting a rally led by the new crop discussion.
Agricultural programming on
rally, I think that you would be lucky to capture half of that because I think your basis that has been continuing to improve, trying to pry the corn out of the farmer's hands, is going to fall apart because everyone's going to try to get out the door at the same time.
All right. Thanks so much. That's Matt Bennett. He is at Bennett Consulting and Channel Seeds. Back in 2 minutes.
It's St. George's Day, patron of farmers. George was born to a Christian family during the late 3rd century. Eventually, he was martyred after refusing to participate in the persecution of Christians across the Roman Empire. George was sainted in 496. On this day in agricultural history in 1856, Granville T. Woods was born. Among Wood's inventions was an electric incubator for hatching chickens. In 1981, artificial skin was first transplanted in the U.S. on patients at Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston. The combination of cowhide, shark cartilage, and plastic was developed by a research team at MIT. This material makes possible the treatment of burn patients whose injuries might otherwise be fatal. In 1985, Coca-Cola announced it was changing its 99-year-old secret formula. New Coke, though, was a big flop. In 1992, the first McDonald's in Beijing, China opened. It is the world's largest McDonald's with 28,000 square feet, seating for 701,000 employees. And in 1993, Cesar Chavez died. He was the founder of the United Farm Workers Union. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agricultural industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us is Mike Tenore. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago to take a look at the weather forecast for the Midwest and corn planting. Thanks, Mike, for taking the time with us. Producers, I guess, are going to get a little rainfall in our area on Friday evening into Saturday. Tell me about that and amounts and then what the forecast looks like, please.
Well, we do have a couple of systems that will sweep on across the United States over the next 5 days, and that's why we have that area of rain that you're talking about for later on in the week and the weekend. Pretty high coverage of rainfall is expected from that event Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and then another system on Monday, Tuesday. So by the time you put all of it together into one piece, it looks like around 4-tenths of an inch to 8-tenths of an inch will be fairly widespread for U.S. corn, soybeans, and winter wheat over the next 5 days, with an area of heavier rainfall most likely across the Delta. The Delta really does not need too much more rain. It's been very wet, especially across Kentucky in recent weeks, and we are looking for another pretty decent rainfall there, which may become an issue at some point for their planting and some of their winter wheat development.
What do you think about temperatures, in particular low temperatures overnight over that time frame?
Well, the low temperature situation has been a bit iffy over the last several days, with temperatures falling below freezing from the northern plains through the northern half to two-thirds of the Corn Belt. Now, we'll see another cool morning across the northeast half of the Corn Belt tomorrow. That would mainly be from Champaign-Urbana and points off to the north and the east. But as we move forward, it does warm up a little bit, at least as far as minimum temperatures go, so we don't look for additional freezes and frosts coming up over the next week. Next week, though, we do need to keep in mind that a large system develops in the southeastern United States. That will develop a very large wind flow from the north over the course of the first half of next week, and because of that, temperatures will stay fairly cool from, say, Monday through Thursday, with high temperatures only in the 50s to maybe the 60s at times. But all in all, it doesn't look too warm next week. So whether we have rain-limiting planting or coolness-limiting planting, either one will be in place through around next Thursday or so.
After we get out past the 7 days and, well, at least to May 1, do things change?
They do change, and this is where it also turns a little bit more interesting. We have seen a fairly wild spring thus far with large temperature variations and large rainfall variations, with some areas turning very dry and then turning very wet. But there's been, throughout this entire period, a large upper-level high in the west. That's the same one that's responsible for the drought in California that made news recently. That's going to expand significantly as we move into later next week, and especially for the first week of May. Because of that, we do see a pretty high probability for widespread coverage of above-average temperatures for the first 7 to 10 days of May, and that would include Illinois. highs should be well into the 70s and 80s, especially to the west of Illinois as we get later into that period of May. So we don't think that coolness will be much of a factor in about a week or two from now.
Hey, Mike, thanks so much for taking the time with us today.
You're welcome, Todd.
Mike Tenores with T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois, helps us wrap up this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.